Please be aware the following interview discusses domestic abuse and traumatic experiences, which some listeners may find distressing.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. With disabled people at least three times more likely to experience domestic abuse, new research from Vision Foundation and Safe Lives found that at least 1 in 12 visually impaired people in the UK is estimated to be a victim or survivor of domestic abuse. But how do you spot signs of domestic abuse and how can you get help? Well, helping us answer those questions today is Charlotte Gianese, practice consultant with Safe Lives. It is really nice speaking with you today, Charlotte.
Hello, nice to speak with you too.
So Charlotte, the term domestic abuse covers quite a large number of behaviors. So would you mind telling us about some of the types of abusive behavior that someone might experience?
Domestic abuse is a really broad term and it covers many types of abuse, including the most well-known, which would be physical abuse, which is things like hitting or kicking. The abuser might throw objects and you might be grabbed and things like that, from like to be prevented from walking away. But it also covers things like emotional abuse, such as like isolation or saying nasty things, psychological abuse like gaslighting, which will make you think that you're going mad or you're overreacting to what's happening around you. You could be cut off from your friends and things could be moved around the house, things like that. But there's also things like financial abuse, digital abuse, where, you know, you'll get getting messages or abuse over social media. What we see a lot now and is a new crime is coercive control. So that can be telling you where you can go, when you can go there, what you can wear, kind of monitoring you all the time, restricting your access to things that you might need. And also sexual abuse comes under domestic abuse as well. And that can be quite difficult to identify at times as well, because that could be any unwanted sexual activity. So it could be kissing or touching, or you could be pressured into sex. So it's a really broad term, which is why we use the term domestic abuse, just because it covers so many different types.
And could certain types of abuse be more prevalent if the victim is visually impaired?
Yeah, our colleagues at Safe Lives and the Vision Foundation, they did the Unseen report in 2022 and they found that there were certain types of abuse that are more prevalent. So it could be things like more kind of moving things around in the house so that their victim is more likely to fall or doesn't know where their aids might be. It can be withholding medication. It could be not taking someone to an appointment, generally withdrawing that support that someone might need. So they might need support with walking to appointments or having their cane, things like that. Equally as well, stalking and harassment can be worse for someone who's visually impaired because you don't always know where the perpetrator is. And there's that real difference in power and control, particularly if your abuser is carrying out a caring role for you.
Now, if you find that you're a victim of abuse, reaching out for help can not only be difficult, but sometimes in certain situations, it could actually be dangerous. So are there any safeguards you would advise to someone that wants to get out of an abusive or controlling relationship?
So it's really important to get support from services that specialise in domestic abuse. And that's because everyone's situation is different. And then that will be really individualised and really specialised to that person. They can give you that advice and support on how to leave safely. There are definitely more challenges around this for someone with a visual impairment or any other disability. So leaving can increase that feeling that you're going to lose independence. And as I've said before, like the abuser may well be the carer. So it can feel that, you know, staying in that situation is the easier option. So I would say in terms of reaching out for that support, like if the abuser has access to your phone, for example, and is likely to check it, it could well be safer to ask a friend or ask a professional if you can use their phone to make a call to a support service. If you're able to, asking for an appointment with a GP or with any other professional on your own, because again, if the abuser is your carer, they may attend those appointments with you and therefore you haven't got that confidentiality, but finding a way of having that private appointment will be a really, really good opportunity to disclose abuse. There are schemes around the UK as well, such as Ask for Annie, which is a code word scheme that kind of provides that safe and confidential way for victims of domestic abuse to access immediate help in a pharmacy or in a job centre. And it's that kind of really discreet way of doing that. The professionals in those buildings will know about that and be able to kind of get you to a private space to be able to disclose safely.
Now, you mentioned some of the reasons why it might be difficult to leave, but are there other reasons?
It's incredibly difficult to leave these relationships. I think it can be really difficult from the outside looking in for people to understand that sometimes. However, it feels there are often more reasons to stay in a relationship that is abusive than to leave. And those reasons can be the abuser could be the carer, but also you could be in a relationship with that person. And as much as their behaviour is damaging, there's always that hope and that want for the abuser to change their behaviours. And often the survivors that we're working with will say they would want the abuser to get help for their behaviours and they want that abuse to stop. They have, obviously have a life with this person and a life around that as well, and you just want to be able to kind of carry on with that life. Other barriers can be, you know, that you potentially have to move home, which could be really difficult. And even more so, again, with a visual impairment, you know, you may have to learn your way around a new area. So there are lots of barriers, and it's a big step into that because you may well be losing that care and that independence that you do currently have. But that's why it's really important to kind of seek that support, because all of these things would be put in place and that support would be there to kind of help you rebuild your independence and get a sense of self-worth back.
You use terms like victim and survivor. Is there an importance to using such language?
The terms victim and survivor are really important. So within the criminal justice system, for example, the word victim is used much more commonly. And that's because there's that distinction between a person using harmful behaviours and the person being harmed. And the word survivor is used by people to kind of take back that power and control and to kind of show that they've come out the other side of the abuse. But not everyone likes that word. So it's really important to kind of remember that a victim of domestic abuse may not wish to be called a survivor, or they may not like either term. So it's really important to be led by the person experiencing that harm and kind of ask them how they would want to be referred to.
Are there certain things you should be mindful of if you are trying to help someone who's in a domestic abuse situation?
So I definitely think we need to be mindful, but I think the most important thing is kind of reaching in to provide that help. So I think if you believe that someone is in an abusive relationship, then reaching out and asking those questions. So you've got to think of safety first. So you don't want to put yourself at risk or your friend at risk, potentially trying to find safe ways to meet or contact them when they're going to be alone. You can do a little bit of research yourself just to kind of see what is available locally, and then kind of having gentle conversations around your worries. So it might be that I've noticed you're seeming a bit down lately, haven't heard from you much recently. So just little questions that might alert that person, you know, to know that you're noticing that they're not acting the way they normally do. And just being an ear, really. You don't have to know a lot about domestic abuse to be supportive to someone. You can just be a listening ear. And it could be that you just offer some support for them. So there's this support service. I'm happy to call them for you. But if you're not ready yet, you just let me know when you want to make that call. It needs to be led by the person experiencing the harm and not put pressure on them. If you can kind of remain that steady, supportive friend, you'll be there when they are ready.
And for the person that is in that abusive relationship, what steps can they take if they are looking to get the support?
So the domestic abuse helpline in England is 0808 2000 247. If you're in Wales, call 0808 80 10 800. In Scotland, it's 0800 027 1234. And in Northern Ireland, it's 0808 802 1414. And if you'd like some more information on the project that we're working on with the Vision Foundation, please head over to www.safelives.org.uk. I think it's just really important to remember that support is out there. But if there's an immediate danger to your life, always call 999. So the police will respond. An emergency situation is literally when a crime is in the process of happening, you believe there's that risk of violence or harm, and you just have to act quickly. So we would always recommend calling 999.
Now, let's say we are getting the support. What is it going to look like?
So this will look different for everyone. There is no one size fits all. So the support will be tailored to the person kind of reaching out for support. So when you initially reach out, it's very likely that someone would ask you to complete a risk assessment form. This risk assessment form was developed through lots of research and work with survivors. And it's a list of questions that gives professionals working with you that knowledge that they need to be able to put the right support in place. It might be that you're put in touch with an independent domestic violence advisor, and they are there to provide that kind of safety planning with you, reducing the risk of harm that you're at that time, and kind of walk with you through that process. So it could be that they support you with going to the police, and they support you through the criminal justice process. They can support you around your finances, around housing issues that you might have. They can give you kind of advice around what your next steps are with like child contact, and they can advise you on what legal options there are. So they can't give you kind of that real legal advice. However, they can say, okay, so there's a domestic violence protection orders that are available, or there are non-molestation orders, and that kind of prevents the perpetrator from being able to access you. And it's and also really importantly around that as well, they kind of offer that emotional support. So they will constantly be kind of assessing the needs that you are bringing to them.
And what would you say are some of the most common challenges someone who has gotten out of a abusive relationship might face?
So when you are leaving a relationship, again, it's very dependent on that situation. So it could be that you need to go into a refuge, or it could be that you go into some other form of safe accommodation. You might be able to stay with family. Equally, you know, if you're able to stay in your own home, there will be kind of sanctuary schemes that can be put in place. So this is sometimes called target hardening. It's just ways of making your property safer for you. So it could be cameras and alarms, things like that. There are lots of challenges when leaving an abusive relationship that are common to all victims and survivors, such as that fear of kind of not being believed, you know, the changing of your life. It might be that you've got your children might have to change school. However, for those with a visual impairment, there are kind of other barriers for them to leave. So it could be that loss of independence, you're potentially losing a carer, you then have the fear around like social care and your children. Will you have your children taken away if you're seen as not being able to care for them? And you might feel more at risk because you might not know where the perpetrator may be. So we are really aware of all these additional challenges, and that's why it's so important to have the support of an IDVA or a domestic abuse practitioner who can walk alongside you and identify all of these risks and concerns as you're going along and try and manage those and reduce them as much as possible.
Well, Charlotte Gianese from Save Lives, thank you so much for speaking on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
If you've been affected by any of the information discussed in this interview, help and support is available. If you are in immediate danger, please call 999 and ask for the police. And if you're not in immediate danger, please call one of the following helplines. In England, free phone 0808 2000 247. In Northern Ireland, free phone 0808 802 1414. In Wales, free phone 0808 8010 800, and in Scotland, free phone 0800 027 1234.